Welcome to Red Ice Creations Radio. Thank you for tuning in. It's great to have you here. This is Henrik Palmgren, a little bit under the weather, but still ready for another radio broadcast. If you're curious to know, we are headquartered on the west coast of Sweden in Scandinavia. But on the web, of course, location is no obstacle. We have listeners from all over the globe, and you can tune in to our radio show from anywhere through our website, redicecreations.com. And beyond doing our radio show twice a week, on Thursdays and Sundays, we also cover interesting news on our website. And I want to tip my hat to all the great people in the Red Ice Creations forum for making it what it is, putting up some great posts there and leaving your comments and so forth. I also want to mention that we have a lot of new features and a new material going up on our website pretty soon, especially for all you subscribing to Red Ice Creations. We're putting together a new member section, and some really new cool stuff is on the way. I'm not going to say too much just yet, but we are expanding and moving into new areas beyond radio and news coverage, so do stay tuned. And you can help us, of course, by telling your friends about us and help spreading the word. We have our good friend Freeman back with us on the program today. He has been with us a few times before, and we've gotten a lot of requests to have him back on. And it's very, very timely to have him back today for reasons that we'll get into. Freeman has been out traveling, and he has a lot of fascinating stuff that I'm looking forward to hearing more about. Freeman has his own TV show down in Austin, Texas, and he also do radio every Tuesday night on the Revere Radio Network, and he has been a little bit all over the place lately, popping up in video interviews both in front and behind the camera. Freeman's website is freemantv.com, where you can find a lot of his DVD productions, excellent DVD productions, and many of his TV episodes are uploaded to Video Google, and they can be found at freemanarchives.com. Those are his two main sites that you need to visit, freemantv.com and freemanarchives.com. So let's say hello to our guest. Hi, Freeman. It's a pleasure to have you back on the program.
Hello, Henrik. It's wonderful to be here.
It's great. You know, how have you been since we last spoke?
Oh, I have been on a roller coaster ride of emotions. I'll tell you, right when we left off with the Anna Nicole Brittany story, which hasn't ended, by the way, it just keeps coming.
That's right.
I was left in a pretty much a post-traumatic stress state. I had gone ahead and freaked myself out and with all of those studies and all of the understanding of this evil empire that seems to rule our planet, and was in just such a state of paranoia that I didn't know what to do with myself. I was certain they were coming for me after our last talk.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. And,
you know, I don't do these things lightly, although I present them in somewhat of a humorous manner. Definitely, I know who I'm up against and what I'm doing. I don't do this lightly when I come forward with ideas like mind control.
Yeah, that's right.
But it was with all of that in mind that I left on my trip, and it's funny how our interviews go. Now, Henrik, I don't consider it an accident at all, but a miracle, that you and I would meet on a grassy knoll in Phoenix, Arizona. You know, this to me is not chance. This is divine. And this whole story that I have to tell you is divine in its nature. And it's funny because by the end of it, we'll find out that God led me to a high priest of the Church of Satan.
Really? Wow, what a story. I can't wait to, you know, get into all of this. As you said, I guess you've been traveling during the entire summer, basically. I guess you left your, you know, Texas back in, what, June or something?
Yes, it was soon after our last interview that I decided I needed to go. I really had this trip planned for a while to go visit my mom. She's getting up in age, and, you know, I need to spend some time with her.
Yeah.
And she lives in Orlando, Florida, so I decided I was going to head out that way. Now, to let you know, I did not have enough money to make it home, and I don't worry about such things. And this is part of the tale, is not allowing these boundaries to be drawn, because you can make it, you can live without knowledge of how you're going to do so. You know, so here I leave on my trip without enough money to return, just having faith mm-hmm. in the divine that will lead me back home again or wherever it is that I need to be.
That's wonderful.
And I was, like I say, traumatized and getting ready for this trip. And I was visiting many of my friends to help them, you know, calm me down. At one point, my roommate thought I was on some type of psychedelic drugs just because of the fear that he saw in my eyes.
Sheesh.
And, yeah, it was awful. I don't know. You know, I do feel for the planet. I really do.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was with all of this in mind that I left on my trip. And right before I left, a girl that I hadn't spoken to in 7 years contacted me. And it turned out that she herself had been a trauma-based mind control victim. And she wrote me out of the blue. She found my website through a friend, wrote me out of the blue to tell me that I had released her from her mind control trauma and that I had given her the heart to escape her handler, her abusive husband.
Okay, wow.
And I had no idea. You know, I don't know what I had even said to her to do such a thing.
Mm.
But here I was leaving with all these thoughts of mind control in mind, and have this girl contact me. Well, it turns out she's right on my path. So I leave out of Austin, Texas, and I'm heading towards Orlando, Florida, but I'm making a side trip to visit this mind control victim that is really a good friend. And I'm passing Houston, and I see the sign for the Sam Houston Highway, and of course now I'm thinking about Fort Sam Houston, where they created Jeffrey Dahmer and David Berkowitz.
Mm.
And I realize that I'm on the Lisa Nowak trail. I'm following the same path that the seemingly mind-controlled victim of NASA, the astronaut Lisa Nowak, went from Houston to Orlando to abduct that woman. and I find myself on the mind-controlled trail of Lisa Nowak, going to visit a mind-controlled victim while being in a post-traumatic stress disorder state myself. I mean, this is too much.
Wow, what a story. Amazing. So that's
I had no idea.
Yeah.
And so I arrived in Orlando, and most of my trip actually was to try and get some photos and film of things that I knew about, which were the big penis and vagina that they had put out in front of City Hall. They blew up Orlando's City Hall for the movie, I believe it was Lethal Weapon 2,
mm-hmm.
one of the Lethal Weapons. They blew up City Hall. And I was sitting across the street watching City Hall come down because, well, you know, you just got to watch City Hall fall. And then they erected this large phallus out in front of City Hall, and everybody in Orlando was like, why did we pay? I think it was $140,000 for the thing.
Mm-hmm.
And they were all upset about it. But nobody really noticed the gushing vagina off to the side of it. And this whole structure just happens to be across the street from the Grand Bohemian Hotel, which most of us know about, the Bohemian Grove.
Oh, yeah.
Well, they erected this large phallus in front of Orlando in honor of Orlando being the first point of light in the Thousand Point of Light system, in HW's Thousand Point of Light system. Which really meant was Orlando was the first police state in America. And I can testify to that. Orlando was absolutely a huge police state.
Really?
We had cameras back in the 80s, you know.
Sheesh, okay.
So I wish I had gone on a little bit further and visited Hollywood, Florida, where Anna Nicole dropped dead at the Hard Rock Cafe.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't complete the whole mind control trip and that idea because I didn't know. I didn't have any money. I didn't know what I could do and what I couldn't do.
Yeah.
But it was while I was at my mom's house that David Icke got word of my article on Anna Nicole and decided to post it on his website, and I got massive attention. I mean, the spike in my viewers to my website looked like the large phallus that I was just photographing in front of the City Hall.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
I was amazed. Thousands and thousands of people came to FreemanTV.com, and I was just like, oh, my God. At that same time, I have an unknown benefactor, someone who really just loves Freeman and what he does, and to speak of myself in the third person, and he occasionally drops money in my bank account. I have no idea who he is, where he is, or anything, and that very enough money to do whatever it was I needed to do.
Wow, that's great. Wow.
I was still frightened. I was still thinking perhaps some of these nefarious characters I had outlined in my article were going to come after me legally. And it seemed as if maybe Howard K. Stern was speaking to me straight through the television. And he had hired the lawyer from the JonBenet Ramsey case. And I was just like, oh, God, you know. And then I watched as CNN brought out every single person that I had talked about. They had the whole cast of heroes on the Larry King show. And then he brought out Cyril White, the pathologist that I had talked about, who was involved in the JonBenet Ramsey case and also the Billy Smith case.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, they were calling out every Satanist that they could think of. They had Penn of Penn & Teller on trying to debunk the 911 truthers. Now, this guy has the largest satanic library in existence under his house.
Oh, really?
My God, it's just Satanist after Satanist on this show. And it started to dawn on me that we are being presented with so many of the evil people on the screen that we're starting to forget that they are the evil people and think
mm-hmm.
that they are us.
Mm-hmm. But yet this is not...
Yeah, I mean, it's amazing once you start to piece that together.
Wow, yeah, exactly. But I guess that the image that they portray, you know, obviously is that they're very good and, you know, wholesome people in that sense, and they're definitely not into the occult. So it's not until you begin, you know, scratching the surface, I guess, a little bit that you discover that, you know, like the Penn & Teller guy you told me about there. Or is this something that he, you know, rants and brags about, that he's got this huge satanic library?
They did have a big television special on it, and that's how I know about it.
Oh, really?
They actually took cameras down into his library, which is in a hermetically sealed vault under his house.
Okay, sheesh.
So, yeah, I've actually, you know, viewed the library.
Yeah.
Well, at this point, I was still, as I was saying, still frightened. It was hard for me to eat or sleep. I just couldn't get over it. I couldn't get over what I had done, really, you know, bringing all this to light and then mm-hmm. watching CNN bring everything to try and counter my article, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I really felt like they had their eye on me, and I'm sure they do. The story got deeper and deeper, and they finally announced Larry Birkhead to be the father, right?
Yeah.
99.999% the father, and of course, I don't believe this. I still ascribe that it's Prince Frederick von Anhalt's child, and that Daniel Lynn is a genetic experiment to resurrect the child of Hitler. I will stand by that till my dying day.
Okay, yeah.
Well, all of a sudden, here's Larry Birkhead getting announcing that he's the father, and he tries to get Daniel Lynn a passport so that they can escape the Bahamas. And the American embassy shuts down for lunch for the rest of the day. And this is Friday, so now Larry Birkhead is stuck in the Bahamas, as if the government, the very embassy of America, is trying to capture and keep him there. And while he's trapped there, Virgie Arthur, the mother of Anna Nicole, announces a new court case in which she is now trying to keep the baby, Daniel Lynn, in the Bahamas.
Hmm.
Now, this is so curious, because here is all of her time spent in the courtroom trying to get Billy Smith, Anna Nicole's body, and the baby back to Texas.
Mm-hmm.
And now, as soon as they announce Larry's the father, now she's putting forth a court case to say that she wants the baby to stay in the Bahamas.
Hmm.
Well, who's going to take care of Daniel Lynn?
Hmm.
Who's there in the Bahamas that's there for the baby? Who is she trying to keep it with? Nobody answered these questions. But the court decided that Virgie was just off her rocker, and they fined her $3,000 for even bringing it up.
Really?
Now, the newscasters kept going, well, where is she getting all this money on a policewoman's wages?
Hmm.
And this is a very good question, and probably won't ever be answered. But yet, it was this moment when she announced that she was trying to keep Daniel Lynn in the Bahamas that all the fear just left my body. It just went away, as if she had turned a switch. Because either this was just so unbelievable, so incredible, so strange, that my mind finally said, hey, okay, you're free. Okay, they just gave their hand. Here they are, you know, showing that they are up to something.
Mm.
And so it was then that I was free to go. Now I had all the money to escape, and my heart was set free. And so I contacted... contacted WQXT in St. Augustine, and they air the Freeman perspective there, which is quite curious, because when I spoke with the owner of the television station, he tells me that most of the CIA retirees retire there in St. Augustine. And as I got there and started to look around, I thought maybe I understood why. If we start to accept maybe the Cthulhu mythos and that all these strange occultists are turning back into fish people and going back into the ocean. But you'll understand what I mean. When I got to St. Augustine, this place was just covered in obelisks. I mean, the town is just covered in phalluses. All of them marking, well, most of them marking their Freemasonic roots. Back from the 1800s, I found dates for the Masons on their obelisks. And now these obelisks stand right over what is known as the slave market. Now here we have our illustrious founding fathers announcing that they buy and sell humans, and they also want those that are being sold to know exactly who is being sold or who is selling them, because the obelisk stands just right over the slave market. And on this obelisk it says, "Our dead," period. Sheesh. Now, this could be in reference of a monument to their dying soldiers that conquered the land, or it could be in reference to what the phallus is in reference to, which is the dead god Osiris.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, I started looking around St. Augustine, and I found myself at Flagler College. And in Flagler College, Flagler is known to be a cohort of the Rockefellers. Of course, they're one of the 13 Illuminati bloodlines. He stands in front of the campus with his hand in the pocket, or the symbol of the hidden hand. And he has a gateway that enters the Flagler College. Now, Flagler College is surrounded by implements of destruction or torture. It's got spiked mace balls as its adornments. And then these are all held together by Iron Maidens, or what at least look like Iron Maidens, or torture devices, surround the campus.
Sheesh, okay.
The gate leading in, the archway that leads into Flagler's College, has a frieze on the face of it. And on it, it shows a little angel child, or a cherubim, in a portal, what looks like perhaps a little glass jar of some sort, like a little portal. It was very strange. You can see the picture of this in my film, The Sorcerers of Atlantis, which is really just one of the TV shows. I'm working on making this into a movie. But now this child in a portal is set on either side by two other angels riding fish monsters. I was like, wow, that's curious. But then I looked to the next pane in the frieze, and it's a two fish-tailed angels pulling on a torch, and one of the angels looked very traumatized. And just below that is an owl in a portal, and we're back to the Bohemian Grove symbolism. And next to that is these amphibian creatures, and then another angel that looking very much traumatized. I mean, this poor little angel, I hate to be so explicit, but this angel looked butt raped. And this poor little angel, you go look at the picture and you'll see, it's on my website. You'll see this poor little angel in a portal with looking horribly traumatized. And I'm like, God, this is just so strange. So I go into through the archway, and what is awaiting me is a large phallus. Well, it looks very much like a very large penis, gushing water out of its head, and that all flowing down into a vaginal bowl. And now we've got the, what we're looking at is the real representation of Target's logo, the sun sign, the point within a circle. Its real meaning is sex, and all of this is sexual references. And so here we have the point within the circle only elongated into a phallus and a vaginal bowl, and it's surrounded by amphibians, fishes, or frogs and turtles. And if that wasn't enough, there was an evil fish monster sitting over next to it with a little boy holding his penis.
She's really.
Oh my God! You know, and then all around there, it's surrounded with dragons.
Hmm. And this, and all of this is in at Fladger College, and in we're still in St. Augustine now.
Yes.
And because you started out your film, I guess, you know, a little bit talking about St. Augustine, and you mentioned that this is one place that probably has one of the oldest histories in America, isn't that right?
Absolutely. Ponce de Leon landed there in 1513. So we're talking about hundreds of years longer than even America's been America.
Hmm.
And, you know, the obelisks rule galore. I mean, they're everywhere.
Yeah. Do you know, but I guess that these the statues and monuments that you're describing here, do you know when they are from, like 1700, 1800 or later? Or?
The obelisks were dated around 1800s. The Flagler College, I did not find a cornerstone for.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know the date on Flagler College.
So do you think that all of this that you're describing here with a, I mean, this is, again, obviously about the life-creating force and generativity and all of this. Do you ascribe this, you know, solely to the founding Masons of the area, do you think?
Yes, yes, definitely. That town is riddled with it.
Hmm.
And, you know, I'm just trying to get to the source, really. I'm trying to identify these symbols and then try to understand them.
Hmm.
And, of course, a lot of my explanations have gone off-planet, and I'm looking into galactic history, and I keep finding these connections with merfolk, or fish people of Atlantis. Now, whether or not these were actually, you know, fish people that were around at that time, I mean, certainly there's enough history to suggest it. It's merely our belief systems that keep us from even thinking along these lines.
Yeah.
But yet these explanations seem to be more rational, as far as I'm concerned, than the others, to say that this is simply that they were sailors and therefore they ascribe to fish people symbolism, which could be the case. And the very fact that myrrh is the ancient Egyptian word for pyramid, we could also equate that perhaps they were identifying themselves as the pyramid people, the pyramid folk.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's a curious conundrum, and I'm digging to find these answers.
Well,
I'm going to speak with Stuart Swerdlow tonight about galactic history.
Oh, you're having Stuart on later tonight?
Yes.
All right. Oh, excellent. Yeah. By the way, for anyone who wants to tune in, do they have to be in the area to watch the Access TV channel, or how does that work?
You would have to see it live here in Austin. It's only on the I on Time Warner, and it comes on Thursdays at 10 on Channel 16. But then, of course, I come home and immediate upload to Google Video.
Yeah.
And if you become my friend on MySpace, I'll bulletin it to you as well. So I'm Freeman TV on MySpace as well.
Okay, all right. That's excellent. Yeah, nice to have Stuart on. We have him scheduled here a bit later on the month also. It's been, you know, his research is very interesting. And again, I guess a lot of his work also ties into what you're doing, just in the sense of trying to, you know, figure out. And as you mentioned, you have to look into galactic history eventually in order to try to pinpoint where all of this is coming from. Because as you mentioned, the thing about the merfolk is again something that is very common in many cities. Again, you have the famous statue there in Austin that you've filmed so many times, you know, or have in your DVDs, you know, with the merfolk basically pulling a chariot, I guess. That's in Texas, right?
Yes.
And
Columbia.
Okay, Columbia. Yeah, okay, and then we have the same thing actually in Gothenburg here in Sweden. This is if you go around the architecture and look, there's lots of Poseidon's, Neptune symbolism, and even, you know, seahorses and things like this. So it seems to be, again, a very common thing. And you're right that this has some kind of connection to the ocean or the merfolk. The question is as you say, where this might lead us. We might go off planet or on planet and just figuring out that, okay, these are just people basically trying to create their mythology, because I guess that is one possibility here also. Would you agree on that?
Yes. And really, the main point is we have in America, we have all these illustrious founding fathers that everyone, idealizes. But they know nothing about them. I heard on Coast to Coast the other night, somebody phoned in to a guy that was, Howard Bloom was the guest there, and he asked him, well, do you think that the Freemasons have anything to do with this? And his response was, well, I don't know anything about the Freemasons, but George Washington was one, so I must like them. And to me, this is very curious, because as I outline in a couple of my works, is all of the presidents being members of this single fraternity, and no one knows anything about it.
Mm-hmm.
And so here we have what's supposed to be an open and free democratic republic, and yet here we have a list of people that are obviously in cahoots together, and no one knows anything about them.
Yeah.
And that should be question enough for you, that this same fraternity has been in charge of planet Earth, or, you know, America, for a couple of hundred years, and no one knows anything about what they do, what they think. And this has been hidden from you. These people are deceitful. So we have a deceitful government right from the beginning. To me, this is the biggest question.
One thing that comes to mind when going back to I guess, the symbolism and some of the architectural features and so forth that are ascribed to a lot of Freemason or Masonry, of course, could there be some kind of Aquarian theme going on here again, that these are not people that are into, you know, communicating through to you with, you know, words or telling you like it is, but this is it's a mystery here that you have to discover. And what I'm thinking about is, could there be a message here that this has to do with the dawning of the Aquarian Age or whatever, because, I mean, 100 or 200 years in the time of, you know, moving through the processions of the equinox, that's not very long time, basically, you know.
No, and yes, you can find definitely that type of message in certain codes. The penis and vagina thing, I'm not so sure equates to that.
That's right.
I'm still trying to sort that one out.
Yeah.
And I don't ascribe to the fact that they're just trying to cover the fact that they're a sexual cult. You know, that to me doesn't... And one of the phalluses has a big cross on it, so,
mm-hmm.
You know... The one that says our dead actually has a big cross on it. These symbols don't exactly equate to simply the Aquarian Age with such things as the owl and the portal or the traumatized angel.
You're right, yeah.
And I went along and looked a little further, and I found a caduceus symbol, which is often equated with the DNA or sometimes with the kundalini or the chakra system. But this particular caduceus in St. Augustine, on its head, instead of having serpents, had these awful-looking fish monsters. And there again, I was just like, I don't know. And I have found, you know, I look at these things with the occult eye, even though I'm not quite an occultist. I do have a library on it, and... I have found connections with Kenneth Grant, who is one of the
grandmaster,
one of the followers of Crowley.
Yeah, he's the grandmaster of one of the branches of the OTO, I think.
Right, and he took Crowley's watchtower deities and transcribed them all into the Cthulhu deities, and so we're back to the fish monsters again. You know, there's people in these areas that are coming to the same conclusions, you know, even though they are very strange.
Yeah, definitely. That's exactly that, and it's so fascinating. Again, I mean, just to trying to unravel all of this and see if it's mythology, if it's any truth in here, or if it's just again some kind of myth creating. But I agree with you. It's fascinating. And I mean, so you went down there to St. Augustine. We're at the college. How did you get from there over to another very interesting place that you visited and that you had included in your latest video? You went over to Tennessee, Nashville, Tennessee.
Yes, and here I was in St. Augustine hanging out with the owner of WQXT, and he introduced me to his good friend George, who owns Athena's Restaurant. And so I found myself eating Greek food from Frixa, Greece, which just caught on fire. George is there right now. Sitting here in Athena's Restaurant, and I couldn't help but note the synchronicity in that. As I was looking at a plaque of the Parthenon on the wall in St. Augustine, knowing that I was on my way to visit the Parthenon in Nashville. But along my way, I figured I should visit the Georgia Guidestones.
Yeah.
And so that was my next spot on my trip. Now, I didn't know how I was going to... I figured I'd just drive through, film them, and keep going. But it turned out that my sister lives right by the Georgia Guidestones, and I didn't even know this because she had recently moved, and I didn't know. She didn't even know about the Georgia Guidestones or anything, but it turns out here's my sister right there. So I went and stayed with my sister and went and filmed the Guidestones and talked about them for a bit on the radio.
And by the way, I have to ask, what do you make of them? I mean, there are so many different interpretations of them. Some people seem to think that they're, you know, the commandments I'm talking about. There are 10 commandments here in, I think, 8 different languages on them. Some say that, you know, it's very sinister stuff on them, and some say it's very, you know, good stuff on them. What do you think about it?
Yeah, that's interesting. I was watching 2012, The Odyssey, last night, which got into the Guidestones, and she was coming at it from a positive perspective. And I was thinking about how we can take the same knowledge and one person see it one way, just like the Founding Fathers. You know, I see them as deceitful, others see them as icons, you know. So when I look at it, now, first thing I noticed was that the Guidestones themselves are surrounded in Hollywood, or holly plants. And this is their symbol of death and resurrection. This is why I believe they brought Anna Nicole to Hollywood, Florida, to have her drop dead in front of the baby Daniel Lynn. The Hollywood has always been one of their main symbols and is their ultimate magic wand. So to find the Guidestones surrounded in Hollywood kind of surprised me. Then I went to look to see who had crafted this, and there had been some talk about the name there. And the name, it says, author is R.C. Christian. Now, R.C. Christian is not the name of the person who paid for it, according to the news, the Albertan news source there. That was definitely a code name. Now, the code R.C. Christian would definitely equate to Christian Rosenkreutz, the mythological founder of the Rosicrucian Order. The Rosicrucian Order was founded in around the 1400s and was so secretive that even the members didn't know who the members were. But so obviously this was designed by the Rosicrucians. And I found it interesting that all this work they had done, they had misspelled the word pseudonym, and they put an N at the end instead of an M.
That's interesting.
And another interesting error on the founding stone, the guide, not the Guidestones themselves, but on the marker, is the time capsule that's on there, and it says to be opened on, and then there's no date. Now, this immediately made me think of the Cross of Hende, which Folconelli, which is another pseudonym. Folconelli is not his real name. It's the man who wrote Folconelli's book, The Mysteries of the Cathedral, in 1926, is unknown. Nobody knows who Folconelli really is. But he found that all the ancient Gothic structures were actually alchemical books in stone, and that were giving secrets to the initiates who could understand them. And when he got to the Cross of Hende, which I believe is 600 years old, he noticed an error in its Greek writing across the cross arm of the cross, which in Greek said, "O cross, our only hope." Now, there was a strange S, which was put in there kind of sideways, or just and a misspelling in this, in the Greek. And this, he determine that this was a symbol to show that there was a double catastrophe on its way, which he dated to the year 2012.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And then this cross of Hende had tarot symbols on its base, which were the last from the 19 tarot card. No, I'm sorry, from 17 up to 20, leading from the moon to the sun to the Day of Judgment.
Yeah, with a supernova kind of symbol on one of the sides, I guess.
Yeah, the strange A's. Nobody's really deciphered, but you know what? They look a lot like the big flying V that flew over my car on my way to Portland.
No way.
Looked very much like that. Yes. And we'll get to Portland because the story just keeps going.
Yeah. Please continue, yeah.
So here, there are these obvious mistakes on the Guidestone plaque that obviously weren't, you know, accidents. They were code. And then I noticed as we went down the different the list of rules, the new Ten Commandments, as it were. And of course, the first one is the one that most people take note of, which is maintain humanity at 500 million.
Mm, yeah.
Now that's quite a few shy of 6 billion.
Hmm.
So there again, we're wondering, you know, I'm wondering, is this symbolic of the catastrophe? And then are these 500 million going to get their spot in the subterranean bases that our government's building for some unknown reason, right?
Sheesh, yeah. So this is very interesting because you made connections here with the cross of Hende, 2012, an upcoming catastrophe, and then the Georgia Guidestones. The word pseudonym. Do you have any idea why they spelled it with an N at the end instead of an M?
I don't. Intuitively, I feel that it has some connection to the last rule on the Guidestones, which is be not a cancer on this earth, leave room for nature.
Mm-hmm.
Now they put that statement there twice, and to me there again is code. But no, I've yet to decipher it. I've started thinking on different lines, like Nin might be the code, and we're brought back to the goddess Nuit of the Egyptian pantheon, or Nun.
Mm-hmm.
So I honestly don't have a clue.
Hmm.
I just know that this wasn't done by accident.
Well, that's right, exactly. When you carve something in stone like that, you don't make a mistake like that, you know? That's fascinating. And then one other interesting thing again is that you pointed out in the video was that they have 8 languages that we speak now, but also on the top stone, the Georgia Guidestones, basically, it's 4 big stones, and they have 2 different languages on each side of those. And then there's a top stone. Tell us about that top stone.
Yeah, the top stone's interesting, because now, once you realize every language has its own frequency and must be seen as archetypal and not simply just letters. Each letter has a meaning and magic, and each thing, every shape of the letter has a vibration in our reality. So each of these languages comes to you from a different frequency. And one of the interesting ones, and I would really love to figure out why they chose Swahili as one of the languages.
Mm-hmm.
But up on the top, you find where they have ancient Greek, Sumerian cuneiform, and ancient Egyptian. And then I believe the other one was Hindi?
Was it?
I can't remember the fourth right now.
Oh, okay, yeah, I don't remember
definitely
either.
A Middle Eastern language.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And
Now, as I was looking across on the Egyptian side, the symbols that I saw, these hieroglyphs, I see a flying saucer raising up off the ground with, like, lines of propulsion underneath it. And then just down the way from it, an owl. If you're looking at this thing from an extraterrestrial perspective, it really starts to just keep restating itself.
Do you know, by the way, the Akkadian or Sumerian language and the Egyptian hieroglyph, is there any kind of interpretation on those, on the stones, so you can know what it says?
Yeah, I believe that they say... what the plaque actually said, which is, let these stones guide us to an age of reason. Something that, to that effect, I'm certain that that's what that means.
Okay, interesting.
Let these guide stones be a guide to the age of reason. And, well, as you look at the different guidelines, you wonder, you know, some of them seem like a good idea, you know?
Yeah.
One that I found very curious was it saying, well, guide reproduction wisely.
Oh, sheesh, what the heck is that all about, you know?
Yeah, and as we know that these guys are incestuous interbreeding people, like all of our presidents here in America are all descendant of Charlemagne, or at least 39 of the 42.
Yeah.
We find that they definitely guide their own reproduction, that's for sure. Wisely, I'm not sure about that, but
so they might have a
guiding.
They might have a plan then for what 500 million like elite nobility that's still left on the planet, and they're gonna, you know, they're gonna have their little breeding programs or something with these guys. Who knows what kind of vision they have for the Earth? If this indeed is connected with potentially some kind of upcoming catastrophe, and that there is some foreknowledge here that potentially a lot of people could die. I mean, who knows? You know.
Yeah, and once again, they're building those subterranean bases for something.
That's right.
You know, I ended up on TV because I ran into one of the Bilderbergers who turned down his subterranean spot to go meet with the Palladians in Switzerland with Billy Meyer.
Yes.
My life is one miracle after another. There's nothing in it that I plan. You know, just like running into you in Phoenix, I don't consider any of this accident. I'm being guided along a path. And I think that's more important than the information I'm giving you, is the recognition of the miracles that have led me to it.
Freeman, I got to ask you, back up there, what do you mean, you bumping into me in Phoenix? Explain that for me.
Well, we met at the Gem and Mineral Show.
No, we didn't.
We didn't?
No, I was thinking that you were talking about potentially that you could see that something, you know, in the future that we actually might hook up, you know, a meeting like in Phoenix or whatever. But so did you meet someone who said that they were me, or tell me about it?
Well, this was quite a few years ago, and I could have sworn it was you.
Really?
You haven't ever been to the Gem and Mineral Show in Phoenix, Arizona?
I have never actually even been to the United States, so...
This How is, weird.
That's very weird. Yeah, exactly. I can't believe you never told me that before. That okay. Oh,
I thought I had.
That's interesting.
I think I met your doppelganger.
That might be it. But did you talk to the other me then?
Yes. I sat on a grassy knoll and discussed the radio show. And so then when you contacted me, I thought for sure it was because we had met.
Really?
Yes.
Sheesh. But okay, so what the name of the guy? What was his name?
I thought it was Henrik.
Really?
I mean, somebody introduced me. Now at the Gem and Mineral Show, I was hanging around with all these angels. Every person around me was named Raphael, Gabriel, Mikael, or Michael. You know, they were all angels, and they said, "Oh, you need to go speak to this Swedish fellow over here. He has a radio show, and you would be very interested in speaking with him."
What?
And so I went and I sat on the grassy knoll with this man who I thought was you, and I spoke with him, and I gave him a copy of my DVD.
Wow, really? Ah, that's that's amazing, really. You know what?
Don't know. That's amazing.
Have you seen a good? Have you seen any good like photograph of me so you know how I look?
Yeah. And
you
have? Yeah.
Was it similar?
I don't know, Henrik.
Sheesh, okay. Well, we have to talk more about that because that's very interesting. What the heck is that all about? Okay.
Or it was you.
Okay, yeah, because when you said, you know, that we might, you know, that we hooked up in Phoenix, I it was obvious to me that because I haven't even been in the States, so I thought you were referring to like in some kind of synchronicity, you wouldn't be surprised if we hook up, you know, in the future or something like that. But this is, wow, okay.
Yeah.
That's an amazing story.
I will never know now. I will never know. That Swedish fellow was that I was talking to.
Am I some kind of future time traveler or something?
Perhaps.
What's going on here? Well, Freeman, let's continue talking a little bit about that offline later and try to figure out that one, because that's very interesting. But let's get back a little bit to the story itself here. We're talking a little bit about the guide stones, of course. Basically, where do you want to pick up from here? We're talking about potential depopulation and all of this, but do we talk anything about your stay in Nashville and the Bicentennial Mall?
Yes. Okay. So the last thing on the guide stones that I wanted to note was the create a new living language to unite humanity. And in this, I see, once you recognize that that the English language was mostly crafted by Shakespeare, a good portion of it, and when we start to dig into Shakespeare, we find that it's actually Sir Francis Bacon, who was known as Spear Shaker, in honor of the goddess Athena. So here I am, leaving Athena's restaurant, going to a Rosicrucian temple or, you know, monument that's got codes for Shakespeare and the Spear Shaker, and I'm on my way to the Parthenon, which is the goddess Athena's temple in Nashville.
And previously you've been, of course, writing and talking about Britney Spears.
Yes, Britney Spears, exactly. I mean, it's just like one thing after another. Madonna, Columbia, all of it. The talk and awe, it's just endless. So there again, crafting our very language is the way these people work. These are the high magicians that actually create our reality for us, so that the very words coming out of my mouth are words that are created by these magicians, so that I am emitting this particular vibration. So here I leave the Rosicrucian monument, and I call William Henry and ask him if he wants to meet up with me at the Temple of Athena, the Parthenon in Nashville, and he's more than willing. And it turns out that I showed up on Nashville Monday, being Moon Day, of course, and this goddess is a lunar deity, and so the temple was closed on Moon Day. William neglected to mention that to me, and I was a little disappointed because I didn't get to see the 42-foot golden goddess inside of the Parthenon.
Sheesh, okay, oh, that's very sad. Yes, unfortunate, but you did manage to shoot some beautiful stuff at the Bicentennial Mall there.
Yes. Well, one thing just to add on the Parthenon is the symbolism that they had there of the goddess putting the wreath upon the other goddess's head, and this to me was identical to what Madonna had done to Britney in the MTV Awards. Same ceremony.
Really?
Yes.
That's interesting. Yeah, for sure. Wow.
So I meet William, and he's like, well, come on, let's go. He didn't care about the goddess. You know, he wanted to show me this Bicentennial Mall. So we drive up the street from the Temple of Athena and drive past the Temple of Mars, because it seems that Nashville is the new Atlantis. And so they have all these temples. And he takes me over to the capital of Nashville, which sits on a three-tiered hill and looks over this Bicentennial Mall. Now, if you look at the Bicentennial Mall from the air or from the sign that stands out in front of it, you will see that it's a shape that's somewhat like a keyhole, like an old keyhole. And William mentioned to me that this was the same as Seal of Solomon. So I went and looked, and sure enough, one of the seals of Solomon to bind spirits is the exact shape, including the cross arms that are in it. So what we're looking at is a large magical seal placed upon the ground as if it were a garden. And it rests upon a Native American burial ground, and the sign on the face of the thing says that vast numbers of bodies are interred here.
Really? Wow.
So now we have a Seal of Solomon, who was one of the main magicians of his time, who built temples to Molech and to Asherah, who is the goddess again, and even to Shamash, who is the solar deity of the Sumerians, much like the solar deity of Jesus or Krishna. so we have, and of course the Freemasons find their history at the building of Solomon's Temple, which housed the Ark of the Covenant, which was another magical device that was used to either talk to God or to slaughter the enemies of the Hebrews. Now, there again, a very interesting magical device crafted to very specific specifications, very engineered. The Ark of the Covenant, that is.
Yeah.
All these connections with Solomon here, you know, from the Rosicrucians on up.
Yeah.
We have this seal. And as William took me through it, he showed me how it was set up to the chakra system, having fountains at the base of the thing closest to the capital, and that's where all the children played. And this would be equating to the earth chakra. And then the very next thing is a square of grass, and this being the first symbol of man, and the base chakra, where your feet meet the ground. But what I noticed is not so much the chakra system, but these pathways that were on the cross arms of the Seal of Solomon were also in this this seal. And the very first one that you come to, the cross path, leads to the only break in this black granite wall that forms the seal. So the entire seal is outlined in black granite, and along the black granite is a timeline that starts from a billion years ago and goes up to 1996 when this thing was built.
Really?
Now, curious enough, 1996 was the same year that Saddam Hussein, who was claiming to be Nebuchadnezzar reincarnated, was rebuilding Nebuchadnezzar's palace. And according to William Henry, he was also building one of these Kabbalistic devices in front of the palace in Iraq.
Really?
Yeah.
Sheesh, okay, so it's a whole story here. Wow, this is amazing. And I mean, if this thing also is on an Indian burial ground, I mean, this is something like from out of The Shining or whatever. Was there some kind of like dark energy? Was it negative when you were in this area, or how did you feel? You know, your intuition.
Well, it's interesting that nobody visits this thing. They say that they built this all this work so that the townsfolk can enjoy it, but nobody is there. It was constantly empty. Actually, the only people I ran into was an evangelical Christian troop that was trying to spread the word. And boy, did they get an earful from me.
I can't imagine. Sheesh, okay. So, wow. By the way, did you film William Henry anything for your upcoming film about this? Or
I couldn't. He is making a film on this device, which I'm really looking forward to seeing, with Whitley Strieber. And so he was not allowed to be on camera with me.
Oh,
and he
okay.
might even be a little angry that I went ahead and made a film about it. I don't know. But certainly his will be more in depth on this one. You know, I covered so many things, I didn't go into depth.
Okay, I see. Oh, Well, anyway, you got some gold nuggets out of there, because it's, again, it seems to be a very, you know, very interesting area. And even... I mean, tell us about the acoustics at the place. That was just, you know, amazing.
Well, before I got to the crown chakra, the head of this thing, I was passing the second arm, and this had a very interesting device that I don't know its purpose, but what we have is a black orb earth, a black earth floating on water. And spread out in front of this are pentagrams all along the ground. And if you look at them from a high enough perspective, you'll see that it's actually a helix DNA made out of pentagrams on the ground.
Oh,
and this
geez.
Is the area that William Henry called the Stargate. It's surrounded by these large monoliths, something like straight out of 2001, and each one of these monoliths has etched on it different war images, including nuclear explosions, the storming of Iwo Jima, the Pearl Harbor event. All of these are drawn on these monoliths, which stand over the double helix pentagrams on the ground, which is then has this large black orb floating on the water with the sun radiating deep down in it, because it's so polished.
Wow, wow. Which chakra was this again?
This would be the throat chakra by Hit Williams' explanation.
Okay,
and so the first chakra that I was discussing along the wall was the heart chakra. And at that point is the only break in the granite wall, and it's made to look like it's been exploded in a way. And that's the only break is at the heart chakra, which on the timeline of the granite wall puts it right at the Civil War. So that's the heart chakra, and then the next one is the throat chakra, and here William said that this would be where you would emit love or hate, and the black earth was kind of a disheartening, disconcerting icon to that.
Yeah.
Now, this black earth just happened to be surrounded by Hollywood.
Really?
Yes, and the pieces come together again and again. Of course, you realize that in the Madonna ceremony with Christina Aguilera and Britney Spears, they were playing the song Hollywood.
Oh, really? I didn't even think about that. Oh, really? Sheesh. Okay, yeah, again, it's so many connections here. That's just, it's amazing, yeah. Wow.
Again,
I just want to ask you, because that's always interesting, the guys who, build these things, is there any information on the Bicentennial Mall who constructed it?
William talked to the architect. I did not pick up his name. But the architect told William that there was nothing encoded into this structure, that it was merely a park, and that there was no other esoteric meanings to it. But yet he was very curious about how William came up with ancient drawings of this, because this fits into William's Pillar of Meru story very well. And what he had done was shown this... what is it, a particle accelerator device that was shaped exactly like it, and he also found it in ancient Asian art. So he was very curious as to how William came up with these pictures and where he got them. Definitely this thing is not... And then I found out more later when I met with Paul Affoli, who was an architect on the Twin Towers, and was also asked to be an architect in some of these structures being built in Nashville, which he turned down because he said that they were bad magicians.
Really? Wow.
They had no sense of humor, and he couldn't work with people that had no sense of humor.
Well,
they wanted him to act with awe in the fact that they were giving him this job. Now, realize that Paul Affoli is a Kabbalist. He's a utopianist. He has great ideas. He's at least 200 years ahead in the future. He claims that his knowledge comes from the chip that was implanted in his head from his abduction. And definitely, if you start looking at Paul Affoli's artwork, you'll see that he is just way ahead of his time. He designs machines that incorporate 1,000-foot genetically modified jellyfish as their power source.
Really?
Yeah.
I mean, I've seen a few of his artworks, and they're just amazing and beautiful, but I haven't had time yet to study all of his... blueprints, basically. I have a whole database on one of his website, basically, with tons of this stuff. He's amazing, that's for sure.
Yeah, he gave us a 4-hour lecture, and then I talked with him for another 2.5 hours after that. So I have a good 6.5 hours of Paul Affoli discussing all these things.
Wow, that's amazing. Hey, Freeman,
he is a magician. He is a Kabbalist. And I don't ever mean this in a negative fashion. There's good Kabbalists, bad Kabbalists, right? But the point being that he is a Kabbalist, and he was hired as such to design a Kabbalistic garden. He's working on one of his own right now, and incorporating geomancy or earth magic into the structures. Now, here is a man that is into creating symbolic architecture that, supposedly has effect. And he was hired on as one of the World Trade Center, or the Twin Towers, architects.
Yeah.
And was actually fired from being such because he suggested they put these passageways between the Twin Towers, and was fired on the spot for even suggesting such a thing because they wanted to keep this within their So right then and there, you've got an alchemical building being created by a catalyst. You know, there's just no doubts in this anymore.
Yeah.
That this was a symbol of the Illuminati.
Huh, amazing. And again, I think he did an interview on Radio Orbit. This was a while back when he talked about that they actually built in even explosions in the World Trade Center buildings, I think.
I hadn't heard that.
Okay, you guys didn't talk about that at all?
No. Oh. See, I didn't know any of this stuff about Paul until we started talking.
Okay. Hmm.
So.
Yeah, I have to send you that clip. I think it's still available either on Mike Hagan's website or somewhere on the web. I got to find that for you, and I can link that up in this interview also. That's an interesting, you know, clip in itself. But, you know, Freeman, I have to actually suggest that we begin to round things off with this segment, because we're beginning to run out of time for this first segment. We're definitely going to continue talking more here. We have tons of stuff that we haven't gotten to yet. The Knights Templar, the 700-year anniversary. We've got to talk about your UFO sighting. I mean, there's tons more here. But I know that you specifically wanted to kind of round things off on a synchronistic note, so to speak. You want to talk a little bit about kind of the background story or the basic message behind what you have been experiencing so far, isn't that right?
Absolutely, because really, once I present all this information, the likely and the most common question that comes my way is, well, what do we do? And I really do believe that the answer is in the story. And it's not in the details, not in the facts that are given, not in the fact that there's catalysts creating geomantic structures around the globe, but in the fact that God, or the universe, however you want to call it, the Most High, that there is an oversoul, that there is a power that can guide you, and that this is the true answer, that identifying the enemy and eradicating him is not our answer. This one has never worked. But as we start to move into this closing years up to 2012, we start to move more and more into the Mayan mindset, which is based on synchronicity. And with all of their calendars, I think they had over a dozen calendars, they were designed in order to keep them within the synchronistic realms. And we ourselves we can highlight one or two. You know, we get goosebumps or whatever when we find ourselves in a perfect situation. And for the Mayans, this seems to have been their natural state. And I believe we're moving into that type of mindset, and that these synchronistic events are occurring more and more. So for me to have all of these inner links, you know, as we've covered with Anna Nicole and Brittany and the goddess and the owls and the sitting at Athena's restaurant, these to me are the true story, that the miracle of life that has been forgotten, the wonder. Everybody wants to believe at this point that they know everything and there is no sense of wonder left in humanity. And if that's the case, we're all doomed. That's not the case.
Yeah, exactly. That's not the case. You're absolutely right. I couldn't agree more. And again, I think that I think that your work is so you know, wonderful in that way. I remember the first DVD that I watched that you did. I think it was called just The Freeman Perspective, basically. And that to me had that kind of quality and that kind of sense to it, the mystical aspects and the enigma was still there in a way. This was not just all about revealing how planned everything is in advance and that we basically have no chance here. This is about, you know, also finding the mystical aspect in all this. And I think that you are able to portray that beautifully, Freeman.
Yes, that is the main underlying theme of Freeman. My life is just too miraculous, and I don't think it's just me. I don't think that I'm some special being that gets guided. I think it's all of us. But once you release your control dramas, once you release your boundaries, you know, I drove to Portland, Oregon with -$6 in my bank account. I'm not stopped by rational thinking, you know. I have absolute faith in this miraculous world, mm-hmm. and I live by it. And that is my true message to the world. All the rest is just fluff, really, and interesting. And I only want to spread wonder. I don't want to give people a message of who to hate and who not to hate. You really can't use me for that. I'm way out there, you know. People that want to create a rigid belief system can't use me. But that is it. That really is the guiding factor, is open yourself up to this synchronistic, mystical, miraculous realm and just watch as it unfolds. It doesn't require your planning. It doesn't require you to outline it. It will outline itself and will be even more spectacular and miraculous than you could have outlined for yourself.
And that's why you need to head over to freemantv.com and check out some of Freeman's material that he has on there. Tell us about some of the DVDs that you have there before we round things up here.
Okay, well, I have the 3-hour The Freeman Perspective, which is my first and still my favorite, which goes into all things from Masonic symbolism and corporate logos to harp and chemtrails. I get an hour on the goddess Columbia, and I think I'm the only authority on Columbia. I'm the only one I can find. Just who she is, what she might symbolize, and then finally I wrap that all up with a tale of synchronicity and how I feel that this all works, and how miraculous and wonderful our lives really are, even when we're staring down this gun.
That's right.
And then I have the Return of the Nephilim, which is 5 hours with Michael Tsarian, Giorgio Tsoukalos of the Ancient Astronauts Research Center. I speak with Aurelian, which I got into with Paul Affoli a little bit, and then, of course, my hour presentation on the fact that civilization on planet Earth goes back much, much farther than people are willing to accept and has reached a high state of technological advancement in the ancient past. So that's Return of the Nephilim. And then I've released Anna Nicole Brittany and Mind Control, which is just an unbelievable tale and has continued to this day. Brittany's bodyguard came out and said that Brittany was speaking in strange languages and that it actually frightened him. And she's now being sent back to the Crossroads Clinic where this whole story began. In that, you'll see some things that'll just blow your mind about mind control. You'll see our president, or President Clinton, in a mind control state, and just things that you're not, many people aren't ready to accept. And finally, I know I have one more. Oh, Codex Magica with Tex Mars. Mm. Now that story fits into this story, and we'll get into that next. But the hand signs and gestures of the Illuminati, 2 hours with the evangelist Tex Mars.
Excellent. So exactly, and again, the website is freemantv.com. And again, if we have any listeners down there in Austin listening, your TV show later tonight, tell us how they can tune into that.
It is Thursdays at 10 p.m. Central Standard Time, and it's on channel 16. We have a really good lineup on ACTV this year. It's a good time to have access television.
Sounds good. Excellent. I and Freeman, or me and Freeman, are going to continue talking more in the subscriber section. And as I said, we have lots more good stuff to get to. We're going to talk about the UFO sighting and the Templars, the 700th anniversary coming up here. What is it, tomorrow? No, on Saturday. That's right. Lots more good stuff coming up. But for this segment, Freeman, thank you so much for coming on.
Hey, thank you, Henry.
Welcome. This is